British Spy Stories, Season 2, The Kill Order. Episode 4. Laravel wakes early and forgets for a second that she is on the sofa in Agent Panama's flat in the Centralny district of Minsk. She gets up, showers and dresses in the bathroom, then walks back out to the main living space, where Panama is standing in his boxers, pouring coffee from a machine. "Want one?" he says, holding up a cup. "Put something on, for God's sake." To which he says nothing, but goes into his bedroom and emerges a minute later in jeans and a crumpled t-shirt. "When was the last contact you had with Coda?" she says as he walks back in.
2 days ago."
"And?" she frowns at him.
"He's waiting for us to tell him what to do," says Panama. "Why, what's the matter?"
"Just," she begins, "this one's important."
"Yeah, I get it," he says. "Don't get your knickers in a twist."
"Are we going to be fucking professional?" a voice rises. "Or are you just going to piss about?"
He stops pouring his coffee and smirks at her. "This is how it's done in this country," he says, turning away to the window.
"It's not how I work."
"Well, you're just going to have to."
"I can do this job on my own, you know."
"You don't know the city."
"Then I need you to get your arse into gear, Panama."
"Jenny, this is how it's going to be," he says. "In my city, I decide what we do. I call the shots here. I'm the senior agent for Belarus. That means I say you do, okay?" She is silent. Then he continues. "There is a bloody plan anyway. And it starts in an hour."
He takes his coffee and goes back into his bedroom. The church clock ends its striking of 11 as Laravel and Panama cross the road and dodge the traffic, then disappear down a long alleyway that joins the Mikhailovsky Garden Square to a series of side streets behind the large state buildings that line the main road. Panama leads her round two corners before turning into a restaurant that sits at a road junction. The owner is a woman in her 70s. She is short and wears a black dress and a scarf around her shoulders. Her face is a map of lined skin. She greets Panama with both hands covering his. The woman nods at Laravel as she passes her, on the way to their table, which is right at the back of the place. The walls of the restaurant had been painted deep red sometime in the Soviet era. Now they're covered with photographs and drawings of two distinct groups of people, celebrities and local regulars. Both get equal billing under Daria's strict orders, which Laravel discovers is the name of the old woman. There's an open fire on one side of the room, which gives a womb-like safety away from the wind that sweeps along Karl Marx's Street outside.
"Friend of yours?"
she says, once they are seated.
"Location Epsilon 4, he says. "Our oldest safe house is upstairs, and Daria has been here over 30 years.
He nods in the direction of the old woman, who promptly appears with glasses of beer and plates of food to share. She places them on the table, all the while keeping her dark eyes on Laravel, before walking away. After 10 minutes, the door to the street opens. A man in his 60s walks in and scans the tables for a face he recognizes. Then he sees Panama and walks over to them. He is tall and stoops slightly as a consequence. He has long arms and his hands are grey from the cold. His hair has a fringe and it flops down, framing a face that has seen pain in his lifetime.
"Sabrina, let me introduce you to Dmitry."
"Hello," she says in Russian. The man holds out his hand, which she shakes. Dmitry sits down in the chair opposite them, but he doesn't relax, and his eyes constantly search the room for something or someone. He eventually looks at Panama expectantly.
"We're all set for tonight," says Panama,
which causes a slight brightening of Dmitry's eyes.
"We'll pick you up from your hotel at midnight." "Can I bring a suitcase?"
"Only one," says Laravel. The men both turn their eyes to her, and she adds,
There'll be hardly any room in the lorry.
What is the vehicle? Says Dmitri.
A 44-tonner. Standard international trunking lorry.
And how will we not be discovered at the border?
I can't tell you the details, says Panama. Sorry, it's just the way things are done. You're only told what you need to know.
Don't you trust me?
Says Dmitri, his eyes flitting between the two agents.
We don't meet the rules, Dmitri,
she says, smiling.
How long is the journey?
6 hours to the border. There'll be a stop while the border guards check the paperwork with the driver. Then you'll be in Poland.
And then?
Dmitri's eyes search her face.
The lorry will go on to Berlin. After that, I can't say. I don't know about your status with us.
Dmitri looks panicked for a second. You'll be okay, says Panama. But the man doesn't look any more convinced.
We'll try and get some more information for you before tonight. I need to go, says Dmitri. I don't feel safe out in the city.
Go to your hotel, then, and stay there until we arrive. Make sure you have dinner, as you won't be eating a hot meal for 24 hours. The man moves quickly out of the restaurant and off down the street.
He seems nervous,
says Laravel, taking a swig of her beer.
He's not a field agent, then?
Panama raises his dark eyes to hers.
He's helped us.
In Belarus?
He's Moldovan, says Panama. We could only get him out by this route. There are too many old Soviets in his hometown.
What did he do to upset them?
He was a general thorn in their side throughout the '90s when the country was split between wanting to return to Soviet-Russian influence and being more pro-West.
I thought they'd sorted all that now in Moldova,
she says.
There are people inside the establishment who are pushing back, enough to be influential.
They talk on and eat the food that Daria brings out to them. Then they go on a recce to the rendezvous point. It's on the south side of the city, on one of the warehouse-lined roads, next to the M9 motorway. Before that road snakes southwest to the border with Poland. They make some notes about the warehouse and the streets surrounding the location, then head back to Panama's flat and wait until nightfall. There is no one else in the long white corridor of the Almaga Hospital apart from Agent Carling. He sits with his legs stretched out and checks his watch, which only shows 10 more minutes since the last time he checked it. The door opens 50 yards away, and a doctor starts walking towards him, studying a clipboard in her hand. She is in her early 30s, with large, black-rimmed glasses and blonde hair tied back. She strides with purpose towards him.
Mr. Carter?
Carling nods in response. Her eyes are blue and large, and she inspects him as she speaks.
Michael is doing well.
She looks down at the notes, then back up, and smiles, which he returns.
He was lucky. The knife missed all of the vital organs, but will keep him in for a day or two. Is that necessary?
Says Carling. He notices her name badge, which says Dr. Freya Hansen on it. She stops and considers her words.
He's an old man.
She waits, but Carling doesn't say anything in response.
You're at work, colleagues, aren't you?
She says. Yes, I'm helping him with his research.
What's his subject?
Carling is stumped for a moment and doesn't want to tell her the truth.
Biology.
The doctor looks baffled.
In what context?
Health management.
His mind is struggling to get into lying mode, but she doesn't ask any more questions and puts his discomfort down to post-traumatic stress.
You should go home,
she says.
He's sedated, so you can't talk to him anyway.
Okay.
She turns away and walks back the way she came. Carling's phone buzzes in his pocket. The screen displays the name Aunt Maud, which is the stored name for the MI6 London Central Control direct line. He hasn't been looking forward to this call and considers for a second if he can reject it, but realizes He'll have to face it sometime.
Are you in a secure location?
Says a voice, once Carling accepts the call.
Hang on,
he says. He tries the handle of a door opposite in the corridor. He peers into the room, and it's an empty office, so he goes in. Closes the door and stands near the window as he puts the phone to his ear.
Okay,
says Carling.
I'm in a conference room with Marcus Murphy, and we're on encrypt, Agent Carling.
He recognizes the voice as Sir Bernard McIntosh.
Tell us what happened.
Carling relates the events of earlier in the day, but makes it sound as though he only left Morrison for a few moments. He makes something up about how he went out to check the coast was clear, and the attacker must have been in the cafe and escaped out the back. He can't tell from the noises at the other end of the call whether they've believed him or not. Murphy comes on the line.
We're sending you additional resources on this one, Carling.
He knows what that means. They've labelled him insufficient to carry out the work on his own. The standard MI6 protocol for protection of one civilian asset is one field agent. So this is a kick in the teeth.
I'll be fine and we can't let this slip, Carling,
says Sir Bernard. There's a pause while he waits for more, but nothing comes.
I understand, sir.
The line goes dead, and Carling swears multiple times out loud, with more passion than he had anticipated. The headlights from the motorway that runs past the warehouse have started to thin out as the hands of the clock on the far end wall creep towards 2:30 a.m. Dimitri had packed 3 suitcases when Laravel and Panama arrived at the hotel to collect him, and they had spent an hour going through all the bags to reduce it down to 1. Dimitri had been sullen throughout the process. Laravel had talked to him. She reassured him that his possessions can all be replaced once he gets to the West. They'd gone through the bags and made sure they kept the irreplaceable items, such as family photographs. The process had made her realize how big a change this is for him. He will never be able to return. It's the last desperate action of a man on the run. She sits in the warehouse on a packing case as the driver of the lorry rearranges his legitimate goods to make room for the passengers. Only 9 people could afford to pay the going rate in the end, but with Dimitri paying double, the run will be profitable for Oana and Teresa. A teenager appears through one of the side doors in the building. He is tall and wiry, his black hair cut short at the back, but spiky on top. Fear is drawn hard into every feature of his young face. His eyes are watery and pale green, and his hands struggle to find a place to rest. He is wearing all black, narrow jeans and a thick jacket. He stops and looks at the ragbag of people waiting in the warehouse, and looks across at Laravel 2 or 3 times before she goes up to him. He is Oana's brother, he tells her, but all the time they are talking, he doesn't stop looking scared. The driver is finally satisfied that he's sorted out the space for everyone, and the passengers start to climb up into the back of the truck. Dimitri stands slowly, and Laravel and Panama walk with him to the back doors. The driver has moved some wooden boxes left around in the warehouse to create makeshift steps for Dimitri, as he is at least 20 years older than any of his travelling companions. The old man turns to the 2 agents before he gets on board.
Thank you, he says. You've saved my life. They would have killed me sooner or later.
We got more information about the Berlin end,
says Laravel.
When you arrive, go to the British Embassy. They'll sort out your onward travel.
The old man nods, taking in how different his life will be.
Have a good journey, says Panama.
Dimitri turns to the lorry, and the driver helps him navigate the piled boxes into the back of the trailer. Panama and Laravel walk back out into the cold air and get into the car.
Breakfast?
Only at the airport. My flight goes at 6.
He starts the engine and flicks on the headlights. which cut through the darkness. He noses the car out to the road and turns west for the motorway.